Thanks for listening to this Arrow FM podcast, brought to you with the support of New Zealand On Air.
This Arrow FM podcast was brought to you with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Star Safari.
Star Safari.
Star Safari.
Star Safari.
Star
Safari.
Deep Sky Adventures.
In the universe.
Deep Sky.
Deep Sky Adventures.
Star Safari.
Star Safari.
Star Safari. Star
Safari. Welcome to Y Space.
Yeah, welcome to Y Space. So today we're going to talk about moon gardens, but also a little bit about what we've been doing with imaging the night sky with our observatory that we built. Another one, and our new telescope setup, which is actually not that new now. We've had it up there a while.
Yeah, but it is a very good thing to have while we're there and take pictures. And it's been incredible. I was just thinking when we had it at home,
we never used it
because of the neighbors, because they have floodlights into our gardens.
Well, no, to be fair, it's not them. It's this where we're never home.
Yeah, but...
because we're up the hill.
If we were home and we had a dark sky, you would have gone and taken pictures. I know you would have.
Yeah, I would, if we were here.
I know you're very, very nice.
But anyway, so when you take pictures of stuff in the night sky, because there's not a lot of light, you've got to have long exposure photography. So the aperture has to be open for a long time.
And what is that?
Well, because there's not much light.
Exactly, yeah.
So it takes a while to get enough light onto the sensor to register that something's there. So you have to have the shutter open for a long time, and which means you need to be taking exposures in excess of an hour or two, or in the case of a recent one we've done, which is of a galaxy, 10 hours. And now, obviously, it's not all done at once. It's over a long period of time. So basically how it works is you take a picture with the shutter open for 5 minutes at a time. And with my camera, you've got to take it's a black and white camera. So you've got to put a filter in front of it, a red, a green, and a blue filter. And you do kind of 5 minutes each at a time. And then you add them together with some software, you stack them together, and you end up with a color image. So far we've been imaging a galaxy. Oh, we've been imaging a lot of stuff, but in particular a galaxy. It's called NGC 1313 or Topsy-Turvy Galaxy.
Very cool galaxy.
It is. It's quite nice. And when you look at it in an eyepiece, like in a decent-sized telescope, you can make out a kind of an irregular shape to it, a little bit of a spiral structure with a bit of imagination. But you don't see a lot because your eyes don't really pick up a whole lot. And this is where photography really comes into its own, because you can actually see some of those structures and things in the galaxy and, of course, the color that you can't see with your eyes. So with this galaxy, after about, I think it's 10 hours, 40 minutes we've got so far, now we're starting to see some red and pink clumpy kind of gas clouds in the galaxy, some of the brighter regions where there are big clusters and star formation regions. And, of course, really what's really cool, we're starting to see some of the tidal streaming of some of the stars. Looks like possibly from a previous interaction that galaxies had with another galaxy.
My favorite thing in your picture is how we can actually see a stream of galaxies behind that.
Oh, yeah, there's there's a cluster of really distant galaxies.
And you can see the lineup of them. It's incredible.
Yeah, it's quite amazing. So this is all possible when you start opening up that shutter for quite a long period of time. You start seeing these really, really distant objects and very faint objects. And it just takes a lot of exposure. So with that galaxy, we'll hopefully end up for about 20 hours all up, and that'll bring out some of the more fainter parts of that galaxy.
So what would happen if you would take the same pictures with a lot of light? Like, for example, you try and take these pictures in daytime. I know it sounds like a silly thing, but it's not, because I'm hinting somewhere. Or you try to take these exposures when the moon is full.
Well, so it's a good question, because the background sky has a brightness and that limits how long you can open the shutter for. So when you're in a dark sky location like we are, the dark sky reserve, pretty much in the middle of it, you can open the shutter for quite a long time. More than 5 minutes. In fact, I'm going to do some experimenting. Might even take it up to 10 minutes just to see what it's like. But there's a limit to how far you can go, because even in a dark sky location, even where it's as dark as it can be, there's still stuff in the atmosphere. So there's water vapor, there's dust, there's all these things which reflect a little bit of light from the stars, basically, and that can brighten the night sky a little bit. The way to avoid that, of course, is go into space. That's a little expensive, we've found, isn't it? It's, quite dear.
But successfully,
Well, we haven't, but
well, no, but James Webb did.
yes. So if you've got billions of dollars, then you can put your telescope in space, and then you avoid that sky brightness problem. Or you go up on a really high mountain. That's tricky in New Zealand. We do have some high mountains, but they aren't actually that high. And plus, there's not a lot of roads up them. So that's a bit of a challenge, and they're quite steep. So again, that's prohibitively expensive. So even the telescopes, like up at Mount John, they're not actually that high up. They've still got a lot of atmosphere above them, so they're not really optimized for avoiding that. Not like the ones in Chile, which are, right up on the above 10,000 feet, so they've got plenty of up above plenty of atmosphere. So anyway, so if you've got a brightening sky, well, if you open up the exposure or the shutter for a long time, then the background sky becomes actually brighter than the object you're trying to photograph, and then you can't see it. So you're always kind of finding a balance between how long to open the shutter up and how bright is the sky. If the moon's out, of course, you can't take very long exposures at all because the moon's so bright, depending on what phase it's at. And of course, during the day, well, the sun's out, so that's ridiculously bright, so you can't see anything. That's kind of how it works.
Whereas James Webb Space Telescope just took a photograph of a very distant galaxy.
Oh yeah, just reading today. It took it was 11.45 redshift, which is
What's
incredibly.
a redshift, first of all?
Well, it turns out the universe is getting bigger. If you thought the universe was ridiculously big, well, it's actually getting bigger. And not only that, it's getting bigger faster. So it's accelerating in its expansion. Though there's some recent observations which suggest maybe, just maybe, that acceleration might be slowing down. But we'll see. A lot more work to be done there. But anyway, when you're looking at galaxies that are a long way away, they're a long way in the past as well, because you're waiting for light to get here, and that light takes a while. Now, that light, as it's set out from those galaxies, was at a certain frequency, like visible light. You could see it. Now, as it's trundling through the universe, of course, the universe is getting bigger, so it's stretching those waves, making the distance between the peaks further. And what that's doing is lowering the frequency. So if it, say, started out as blue light, it's going to start stretching, and it's going to end up being red light. And we call that red shift, because everything's getting shifted to the red. Now, you can measure that. You can measure how much stuff is shifted to the red. And so we call that red shift. Ta-da. So astronomers name things as they are, red shift. That's how much the light's been shifted to the red. Now, the more it's been shifted, the further away it is, because it's traveled further through the universe, so it's been shifted further. Make sense? Yeah. So red shift. And so that the more it's shifted, the higher the number is. So 11.45 is quite a long shift.
So it's far away.
Yeah, it's an awfully long way. Now, what that means, it means it's a galaxy that's been imaged by the James Webb Space Telescope, just seen it, that is only a few hundred million years after the birth of the universe.
Wow.
So it's really old.
Wow.
Yeah, older than the Carterton clock tower, older than our lawnmower. So, ridiculously old stuff. So it's quite amazing. So, of course, James Webb's in space. It's 1 million kilometers from Earth. It looks in the infrared, so it's optimized to see stuff that's been redshifted. And of course, its sky is really dark because it doesn't have an atmosphere to look through, and it's shielded from the sun. So it's looking at very, very dark skies, incredibly dark, far darker than what you can achieve on Earth. Now, interesting though, even though it is looking at dark skies, at certain angles, actually the dust of the solar system brightens the background sky just a little bit. So, and we know this because the New Horizons spacecraft, which has trundled out well beyond the orbit of Neptune, that's been taking photographs, and it gets an incredibly dark background because it hasn't got the solar system's dust in the way, because it's out past most of the solar system,
That's very
which is
cool.
kind of cool. Yeah, we So the optimal place for a space telescope is actually beyond the orbit of Neptune.
Beyond the orbit of Neptune.
Or,
Maybe it will find Planet Nine, like we talked to those kids today.
Maybe Planet Nine.
Yeah, we
Just go
talked
and
to these
stick it
kids
on
today,
Planet.
and they were all about black holes and white holes and wormholes and Planet Nine.
Yeah, Planet Nine. So all the cool stuff in cosmology and Planet
And
Nine.
they were fabulous kids. We absolutely loved answering their questions.
Now, for the price of about four fuel tanks of petrol now, you can buy a C-Star telescope. Now, a C-Star, there's a whole bunch of these new telescopes out in the last few years. They're called smart telescopes. Now, what they are is very low aperture, so they're very little lenses. And our
You
one.
mean the tank as the tank, as the physical tank, or the contents of the tank of petrol?
The petrol, because petrol is now the one of the most expensive things that you can get. We now measure stuff in the value of petrol tanks. It's no longer the gold standard, it's now the petrol standard.
Like the other day, we went to the gas station, and when we passed one way, the petrol was one price, and
Yeah,
then
gone up by 30
it's
cents when
back
we turn
gone
up.
up by 30 cents. What? They don't even wait for a day to put it up. Anyway.
But I was thinking about this. Actually, I was thinking something kind of related. When we were driving yesterday or the day before, and we passed a tree, I saw this tree and I was thinking, actually, it was yesterday.
Was that
Yeah.
the tree that we always look at?
I don't know. No, it was just a tree on the side of the road.
A few trees that we
And I was thinking of what
bookmarked.
somewhere I read, and it was one of these famous scientists said, trees or wood is amazing. We build our houses out of it, and it's really amazing. It could be one of the rarest things in the universe. Wood could be one of the most absolutely rarest things in the
And
universe.
we burn it.
Yeah, rock is in. If you build your house out of rock, rock's everywhere. All the rocky planets are all made of rock. And it's all kind of the same stuff. But trees is
I can see
life.
why.
Trees is life. It's made by life.
Yeah, but it's not just any life. It's
It's
vascular life.
a
And it's,
particular organism. It's
yeah,
complex life.
complex life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So wood could be one of the rarest things in the universe.
It would
It would
be.
be, yeah.
Wow.
Don't know. I like what you did there. Yeah.
Thank you.
So, and it's the thing. So as you're burning wood in your fireplace this winter, bear in mind you could be burning some of the rarest stuff in the universe.
People only knew, right? So we think gold and silver and platinum is
That's not
rare.
going to stop us burning wood, is
No, 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 no. Actually, we did have the fireplace
But we
burnt
should think
last
that.
night, but now I feel ashamed of it.
Yeah, well, no, it should be. So taking that a little further, petrol, of course, is refined from oil. Oil comes from underground. Oil is created ultimately by organisms.
Dinosaurs.
Yeah.
Well, petrol is one of the rarest things in the world. So then
Well,
that
oil, yeah.
justifies
Yeah.
its
Its
price.
price. Yeah, it should be a lot dearer.
Yeah, it should be dearer than that.
Not when I'm filling up, though. I want it to be
No.
really cheap.
I want to get an electric car.
Yeah, we need to, yeah. Putting this in the context of the universe, the price of petrol is
It's a direct reflection of how rare
how rare the stuff is.
dinosaurs were.
Yeah. Well,
What were
more than
the
dinosaurs, it was,
chickens?
plants and things as well. Yeah. So interesting, the context of all this. So, well, yeah, so anyway, where were we at? The C-Star telescope, it's made by a company called, I think it's ZWO, isn't it? I can't remember what ZWO stands for. Somebody Optics. Anyway, they make this little telescope. It's got 50 millimeters of aperture, which is a very small aperture for a telescope. But what it does, it basically takes exposures, a lot of exposures, so shutters of less than about 10, I think it's 10 seconds, and it just stacks them.
ZWO.
Yeah,
Well done.
stacks them up. So you end up with hundreds of images stacked, which is a really good way of reducing noise. If you reduce noise, then you can get the signal, so the actual real data. It goes above the noise floor and you actually see it. So the other day, well, so we've just acquired a C-Star from a friend of ours, Robin,
Robin,
in the Phoenix Astronomical Society. He showed us. Initially, we were really skeptical about these things. We thought they were a bit,
gimmicky.
yeah, rubbish, But
But
then he showed
so
us these
we've been doing
amazing pictures.
astrophotography for more than
Yeah.
25 years, right?
Yeah.
More than that. So we've been through everything, through cameras. I did not shoot on film camera, which Ian did, but that's the only thing I haven't done. Everything else was there
No,
in terms of
we're
astrophotography,
too young for film
right?
camera.
We were too young for film
Yeah.
cameras. And you go through the pain of stacking things. You go through the pain of capturing objects that are very faint. You go through the pain of not having enough memory, not having enough sensor. So you have all of this, and all of a sudden comes this thing. You press a button, and all of the pain is gone. And it's like, how's that fair?
Well, when Robin first showed us the Sea Star, because the Sea Star that we bought of him is actually the very first Sea Star we ever saw. And so he was very enthusiastically showing us all these pictures and stuff. And we were like, oh, yeah, okay, 50 mil, whatever. And then remember that he showed us the picture of Herschel's pencil? Or Herschel's
That
nebula.
was amazing.
And that's a really faint nebula. It's almost straight up in the sky at the moment. And that was like super, super faint. And I was thinking, wow, if this thing can take a picture of that, can't be that bad. Hey. So anyway, he's bought a much better piece of equipment, much bigger, and spent a lot more. So he put his Sea Star up for sale, and we were like, yeah, we'll buy it totally because we're sold on these things now. So we've got it, and we've been taking a few pictures. Anyway, the other day we took this picture of a cluster of stars called NGC 5617, which is near to Alpha Centauri. That's one of the pointers that point to the Southern Cross, so in that bit of the sky. And Alpha Centauri is one part of the closest star system to us. So it's one of the neighbors. Anyway, this cluster is quite cool, but it's in a. We took this picture, and there's just so many stars in it. You look at the thing, it's just like
Beautiful.
zillions of stars. And then right next to it is a really, really, you see that really faint cluster next to it? It was quite
It's
amazing,
pretty amazing.
which was called, oh, can't remember, something 19. Yeah, I can't remember the name of it, but anyway, it's a really faint cluster. Quite cool. But anyway, what is amazing about this picture is just how many stars are in it. And that was with an hour of 10-second exposure.
So they are amazing telescopes, and you can actually learn a lot of the night sky by taking photographs of the night sky. So we've been witnessing this shift from unaffordable, far, far away. So I wish more kids could have a sea star. Schools should have sea stars. Maybe that's
Yeah, and all
a
you have
good
to do
idea.
is not fill up your petrol tank four times, and you would have saved enough money to buy
To
them.
buy a sea star or get a secondhand one. Or
Or three tanks if it's diesel.
another thing that is coming up is the Conservation Week, and the Conservation Week is really cool because it's about protecting the environment. And it used to be in New Zealand, it used to be in later on, August, September, but now it's moving to April 2026 and 2026, 2026, 2026, April.
Just when is it again? Just
So it's April 20 to 2026, 2026.
yeah, but what's the day? It's nice and clear. April 20th to April 26th.
2026.
Yeah, we know it. Well, it's this year. Yeah. Of course, it's 2026. Right.
What if someone would listen to our podcast in 3 years from now or 100 years from now? They'll be, which year were these guys
Well,
talking
why aren't they
about?
listening to our more recent ones then? Right, so just to recap, April 20 to April 26 of the year 2026
Excellent.
is this particular week,
It
Conservation Week.
is Conservation Week, which is very cool. And it is naturing and taking small daily actions for nature. Planting days, cleaning beaches, workshops, educational events. So the cool thing about this Conservation Week is that it's coming just after the Dark Sky Week, which is the International Dark Sky Week. So the first week is the International Dark Sky Week, and then the second one is the Conservation Week. And one of the really cool and easy things that you can do during the Conservation Week and the Dark Sky Week, as I was thinking about it, is to turn your light off. And the
Which one?
reason, outside light off. And if you don't use it, turn your light off. And the reason why I was asking you questions about telescopes and exposure and what happens if you take pictures when there's a lot of light is because if you think of all the creatures that leave at night, all the Morpork, all the Morpork. Does it have plural?
More pork.
One Morpork, two Morpork?
I don't know.
See? We don't even know. If Morpork has plural or
There's
not.
some more porks.
Is that how you say
What do you say, Ruru?
it? Okay, Ruru.
Yeah. Then it doesn't matter. You
So
don't have
then it
to.
doesn't
You
matter, it
don't have
doesn't have
to. You don't
plural.
have to dream up a plural.
So these more pork. Everybody loves more pork. I love more pork. But when we turn the light on, we chase the more pork away because we destroy their food source. Because we destroy the environment for the nocturnal insects.
So they don't fly around and find little bugs to eat.
Yep, they don't. So here you go. This is the chain of events that is resulting from us making light pollution. And so it's really cool that these 2 weeks are one after another because it's a really cool segue from the Dark Sky Week, the International Dark Sky Week, into the Conservation Week. And one of the key aspects of the dark sky is also protecting wildlife. Then another really cool way in which you could contribute to the Conservation Week is to have a moon garden in your courtyard. If you have a courtyard, in your balcony, if you have a balcony, and there are very simple ways of doing that.
So a moon garden, is that where you get a rock and you plant it and it grows into a moon?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
So that's a
And
big
then
garden.
in that rock, you put a tiny, tiny little white flower.
Can have a
Well,
rock garden with
you can
white
have
flowers.
or a native flower in the garden. So now we have been growing our moon garden for a long time, for about 6 years, since about 2000.
Yep, that'd be right.
Planted a lot of plants, and we've been experimenting with plants to plant in a moon garden. And traditionally, in the horticultural and landscape architecture literature, a moon garden has been a long-standing tradition for people who were building white gardens or fragrant gardens or gardens for nightlife. And then someone combined them into a moon garden, and thus the name of Moon Garden was born.
So basically what it is it's a garden for nighttime.
Basically, it's a garden for nighttime, yes.
But the distinction is don't light it up with lights.
But yeah, and it's kind of silly in a way because it's called the Moon Garden because we know that the moon is in the sky. We can see the moon during daytime as well.
That's right.
Here you go. Yeah, you can. If you don't believe us, go and have a look outside. Not now, but from time to
Yeah,
time,
well, it's
you'll see the moon.
after a full moon, you'll see the moon in the morning,
Yep.
early in the morning to start with, and then it'll get a bit later.
Yep, and then you can see it.
And prior to a full moon, you'll see it in the late afternoon.
So, here you go. But so it shouldn't be called the moon garden. It should be called the nocturnal garden. But let's just stick with the moon garden.
Yeah, moon's easy to spell.
It's easy to spell. So, but there is a merit in it because the really cool thing about our moon garden, what we have noticed is that once every 28
Years.
days, more or less, is the full moon. And the day of the full moon, if the sky is clear, if you have any plant that is silver or white or silver or white,
Well, yellow works a bit too.
even yellow, but not as much. Silver and white,
So
they do work.
really
Yeah.
light.
It really pops. It really pops. It's so amazing. And it doesn't work the day before. It doesn't work the day after. But it works the day on the full moon when there's 2.5 times more light than the day after the day.
Yeah, and there's a reason for that. It's because at the full moon, the sun is lined up directly with the moon. Now, we can't see the sun, of course, because it's the full moon, so the moon's rising, the sun's set. And but that, you know, with the Earth out of the way, you've got sunlight beaming straight at the moon, and what's happening is it reflects more of that in our direction. It's similar to that. I can't remember the name of it, but the scenario you get when Saturn's rings light up for a couple of days. Yeah. There's a similar sort of things when happens when Saturn's in opposition to us. And the rings are slightly brighter, or quite a bit brighter. So the moon does that on a full moon. So the moon's actually considerably brighter than the day before and the day after, like 2.5 times brighter. So that's why when it's directly a full moon, it's like really bright outside.
So that is a moon garden because you enjoy it when the moon is full. We can say that, but for any other times, you can have a nighttime garden, a nocturnal garden, which is a very incredible garden to have. And as we created this garden at Star Safari, our nocturnal stargazing moon garden. We discovered what species work, what species don't work.
And you do see it, even when it's like a new moon and it's dark as, you actually see those flowers, and
You do.
it helps you see the garden when you're walking around, because the path's quite hard to see. You can actually see where the flowers are and the plants, especially the lighter coloured leaves, and you don't crash into them.
Yeah, and it's incredible what you discover. So if you look at what insects are on those plants, you can check them up. You see who goes where and so on. And we even had Aruru coming into our flax in the moon garden, which was incredible because 6 years ago that place was a paddock, and now there is Aruru inhabiting it. We could talk about moon gardens more. We could talk about how to build a moon garden, what kind of species we can use in the next
Yeah, we can
podcast.
cover that
Yeah,
next time.
we can cover that. But it is a really, really, really impressive thing to build, and a very, very rewarding. And you hit many targets. You have a habitat for nightlife. You have a gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous garden that you can enjoy at a very different time. Because most people are working at work, right, during daytime. So you might as well just come home and enjoy a moon garden.
That's right. Remember, though, don't have lights on in your garden. That's bad for your plants. They like to sleep at night as well.
Terrible for your plants.
Yeah, you
The worst thing you can do for your
promote pests
plants.
and diseases by leaving those on.
Yeah, and debilitating. You're debilitating the plants when you put lights in the
You're
garden.
killing your
You're
plants, you
killing them.
plant murderer.
And we know that a lot of gardening places and light sources and so on, they advertise a lot. Lighting your garden is the stupidest thing that can happen. Yeah, because plants die in the long term because they need break at night. So we can talk about this next time as well.
Right, so enjoy Conservation Week.
Yep. And if you didn't know about don't put lights in the garden, it's fine because nobody knew. But we're learning, so we're happy to share what we've learned with you next time.
Yes.
And in the meantime, we wish you clear skies.
Bye.
Star Safari.
Star Safari.
Star Safari.
Star Safari.
Star
Safari.
Deep Sky Adventures.
In the universe.
Deep Sky.
Deep Sky Adventures.
Star Safari.
Star Safari.
Star Safari.
Star Safari.